I will inherit the moon, and I'll die in the earth.
Welcome to our group.
And this ought to show it right here.
Do you or someone you know suffer from depression? If so, please contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our Medical Tuesday broadcast with your host, our Colonel Kimberly Purvis. Now, for those of you new just tuning into us, be sure to check out our national Facebook page by typing in the search box, all capital letters, Defenders 7. Now, before you click on that join button, just know that we expect all of our members and future members to participate throughout everything we do here in the Defender 7. Check out and subscribe to our website. All lowercase letters, www.defenders7.com. On our site, you will find that we have a store and a donate button. 100% from sales from our store and any donations we bring in go back to our communities throughout all 50 states in a time of need. Not like the other groups where they keep 90%. And only distribute 10%. You are the only way that we can do what we do here in the Defender 7. So please, by all means, purchase something from our store or hit that donate button. Help us to help you and your community in time of need. Hop over to YouTube. Check out our YouTube channel and subscribe. We're on MeWe. Click on Community. Scroll down to Defender 7, Humanitarian American Patriot Group. That's right, folks. We are not a militia. Now, for tonight's show and all the shows we do here on Blog Talk Radio, we do enjoy interacting with you. So, by all means, number to call to participate. Area code 914-205-5773. Too shy to talk on the phone? We also have a live chat room right here on Blog Talk Radio, which is also live during our broadcasts. So either way, come on in, give us your thoughts and opinions, participate in the topic of the night. And without further ado, allow me to bring in your host, our Colonel, Miss Kimberly Purvis.
Howdy, hoes.
Heidi, hi.
I'm tired. I'm not going to lie.
I'm Bob.
I worked too much today. Oh, shit. I'm just tired. Lately, I just feel like no matter what, how much sleep I get, I always feel drained.
Right.
I'll feel like yesterday I felt fine, and then all of a sudden, zapped of all energy, I just felt really lackluster, and I'm like, I'm done. And I was done with work at 12:30 yesterday. Shit.
Yeah.
I didn't care. Yeah, I only had a couple people to see yesterday. I had 4 today. But not too bad. So tomorrow I have my entrance interview for school. Yay. Just when I thought schooling was over. I got about 12 to 16 months of school, roughly.
Damn. Yeah, how about... Tony Dow's management team screwed up today. They said he passed away. That's the guy that played Wally on Leave It to Beaver.
Do what now?
Tony Dow, who played Wally on Leave It to Beaver?
Yeah. Yeah.
This morning they announced he died.
Did he?
No. His management team screwed up.
I guess. Shit. Yeah. Oh, man. So I wanted to go ahead and continue on from last week with pain management. We really didn't. I mean, we just touched the top of what, you know, the different causes. So this week I want to finish up the different types of arthritis, and they got headaches and just your different types of pain. And then if we can, I want to start with, I know it's here somewhere. Hold on a second. If I find it. Nope, that was it. Chronic pain cycles. So I want to finish up the different types of body pain, and then hopefully we'll be able to go through them tonight. I know we've touched on a lot of this shit before, but you can never learn too much about pain. So we left off at rheumatoid arthritis last week. Oh, before I get started, I'm still working on our hospice interview. The woman that I was going to get to do it, she just got promoted to branch manager. So yeah, she's always busy. And you got to have an admin on call. So I got to do it when she's not on call, because we get massive amounts of phone calls every day, you know, for people on call. Yeah. So,
right.
And so as soon as I figure out who's, I'll have to talk to her tomorrow, because aside from my interview, then I have a neurology appointment. But other than that, I should be able to talk to her tomorrow. And we'll figure it out. Excuse me. Who's going to be on call? So anyway, rheumatoid arthritis, it sucks. I'm sure you know somebody who's got it. So unlike osteoarthritis, rheumatoid is, they believe it stems from an immune system disorder that causes your immune system to attack the lining that's inside your joints. You know, it's just not like bone on bone. You've got actually lining, cartilage and fluid and all that cool stuff that belongs in your joints. So white blood cells will move into the joint tissue, and that will produce inflammation and pain. So then the swelling of the tissue triggers the release of natural chemicals that can actually damage cartilage, tendons, and ligaments. And so gradually the joint loses its shape, and you'll notice that if you, with anyone with rheumatoid arthritis, you'll know in the fingers and the hands, the fingers are no longer straight, they're misshapen, and the knuckles are really swollen. Some people with rheumatoid arthritis, I've got some patients that their fingers are completely sideways and overlapping. That's how bad that it can get. Usually it's your wrist, hands, and feet. I really haven't seen a whole lot with feet, but it's possible. It's possible. Same thing with gout. and if you've ever had gout or know someone, you know it hurts. You could get it in your hands and your feet, but most of the people I've ever seen, it's always in their feet. I've only seen a few people with it in their hands. So it just depends on you, you know, on where you're going to get it. But it can also affect your elbows, shoulders, hips, knees, neck, and jaw. So your joints will be really stiff, and you lose motion, the range of motion in your joints. So it usually gets people from the ages of 20 to 50, and about 2 million Americans have rheumatoid arthritis, and roughly twice as many women as men have it. But that's rheumatoid. Now, your osteoarthritis is generally age-related, sports, your job, the military. You know, those kids can actually have arthritis, too. It just depends on injury or something like that. Back pain sucks. I'm sure everybody hurt their back at some point in time in their life. Like if you tweak your back, if you move the wrong way, you can actually get a backache. And usually that goes away and doesn't come back. Unfortunately, for some, yay, so here to stay. So there's different types of back pain. Usually, most of the time, it's usually in your lower lumbar where a majority of your back pain is, but you can have it anywhere on your back. So acute back pain often stems from an injury or overuse. And that's why, and I'm pretty sure every job has this, the OSHA guidelines that tells you how to carry a heavy load. You know, don't bend at your waist, use your knees, and things like that. And yes, I have made the occasional joke, use your back muscle as the strongest muscle in your body. No, don't do that. I'm just being a smartass. You always want to carry whatever it is closer to the body, midsection, to avoid straining your back. Sometimes, though, back pain can occur for no specific reason. Hell, you can sleep wrong and throw out your back. You could cough too hard, sneeze too hard, driving. I mean, there's pretty much anything that can hurt your back.
You can break your ribs from coughing too hard.
Yes, you can. And you could separate that cartilage in between. And, and then it hurts to take a deep breath. When I was stationed at Fort Sam, I got double pneumonia, and I coughed so hard I separated a few of my ribs, the inner, you know, the cartilage, and I had to actually wear my vest with my 20-pound plates in it, and it hurt so bad that when I would cough, I would kind of like pull it closer just for the pressure so it wouldn't hurt as bad. So yeah, I mean it's when you do that little tiny cough that you don't want to do. So muscle strain and muscle spasm is another form of back pain. Muscle strain is a common cause of back pain, especially in your lower back. Muscle strain can occur if you lift something too heavy, twist too sharply, or stand on your feet for too long. That's what I was saying. A lot of your industrial jobs, they have those back braces that with the Velcro, and they have the straps, and they're really good for support. Excess body weight and poor posture can also lead to muscle strain. Yes, excess midsection weight sucks, but excess weight also puts damage on your knees as well. That's why if you notice, a lot of pregnant women have a lot of lower back pain. Not because the kid's kicking her back, but because of the center of gravity. Everything's like right in the middle. Same thing with a guy, with guys with a big beer gut. They usually have a lot of lower back pain as well. When your back muscles become too strained, they can also spasm or knot up, which is really painful. Spasms in your back's response to injury are designed to immobilize you and prevent further injury. Any movement in the injured muscles can set off a wave of stabbing pain. If anybody's ever had muscle spasms, they're awful. Flexoril does work for muscle spasms. I take it, and sometimes it doesn't work. You know, but there's what, gabapentin, robaxin, what else for muscles and spasms and stuff?
Tizanidine, cyclobenzaprine, Soma, Flexoril.
You know, I was given.
Yeah.
No, you think tizanidine?
Yeah, tizanidine, cyclobenzaprine, Soma, Flexoril. Gabapentin is more for neurological pain, and Lyrica. They're both kind of for neuralgia, radiculopathy. But for the muscle, relaxers are pretty much tizanidine, cyclobenzaprine, or methocarbamol.
Yeah, methocarbamol. So that one of my patients used to have baclofen, methocarbamol, and baclofen, methocarbamol, and robaxin. Yeah, she's got three. And she's got a lot of nerve pain and back spasms and stuff. The Soma, I don't know. I took it one time when I first got had back problems. It knocked me on my ass.
It's controlled and it's habit forming.
Yeah, not a lot of doctors like giving it out. I mean, it's old. It's an old drug. But
and because it's habit forming, a lot of doctors won't give it out.
I mean, like with myself, I get when my body feels so tense at night, I can't get comfortable, and I'll just take two extra strength Tylenol and a Flexoril, and usually it helps relax me enough where I can go to bed. Just from my cervical spine all the way down to my lumbar, and then my shoulder, and that's what I have to do. I mean, that's I know Aleve works a whole lot better, or your Motrin and stuff, but it's just less pain on my stomach.
Yeah, and if you combine it with magnesium gluconate or glycinate, and Aleve will work as a muscle relaxer.
Really?
Yep.
That's good to know. I'm going to write that down because I got it.
Yep.
So which one was it, Mag what?
Magnesium gluconate or magnesium glycinate.
Oh, man, it's like...
Big old words.
It could be worse if somebody had compliments or something. You better not let that chemical around, man.
I hear you, brother. You can buy it over the counter.
So the good news is about 90% of your muscle strains, they resolve themselves within a few weeks. Usually, sometimes sooner depends on how much you rest it and, you know, you're to do being what you're supposed to do. The remaining 10% or so take longer to heal, and I would take it has to do with age and other comorbidities, which prevent it from healing quicker. I know we talked about sciatica a little bit, and that's because of the sciatic nerve that extends down each leg from your buttock to your heel. You can get inflammation or compression of a nerve root that's in your lower back, and that's what can cause sciatica. I think everybody in my family's got it. So, hey, is that a hereditary issue? Or is that just happens to be a game of chance that everybody has issues with a sciatic nerve?
It's very common. Yeah, most commonly...
It's common.
Damage is done at the Yeah, the most common is because of damage at L5-S1 affecting the nerve root.
Oh, okay.
It runs down the buttock and circles around all the way down to the big toe and can cause pain, neuralgia, numbness, bone burning, a lot of different symptoms. Military-related, prolonged standing, marching in boots, walking on hard metal decks, paratroopers,
Oh. Those
kind of things cause a lot of that.
I know my mom, both her sisters have sciatic problems. My cousin does. Like I said, they're just brain wrecks. I don't know. And, you know, but of course, everybody in the family, teachers, working on a railroad. I mean, a lot of military, so I mean, it's probably the reason why in my family.
Sedentary lifestyle, getting around from video games.
Yeah. So you can get tingling or numbness. Or muscle weakness can also occur. I can't pronounce this word to save my life. I may know a lot of them, but not all of them I can pronounce, so I'm not going to even butcher them. Another cause of sciatica is related to spasms or tightness in the buttock muscles, and this is called piriformis syndrome. Did I pronounce it right?
Yeah, piriformis is one of the muscles.
Oh, cool. Okay. And usually that pain goes away on its own. Usually, like when they say usually, nothing's a guarantee in medicine except for nothing is guaranteed. So that's the only guarantee you have. It's nothing. Pretty much the way it works. Herniated disc, we kind of went over this. You can either have an injury or just normal wear and tear. Can cause a disc between the bones in your back to bulge or rupture, and which they call it a slip disc. And they got some really cool pictures, but too bad Lauren's not on. We have some really cool pictures. So when the disc ruptures, the rubber-like interior of the disc will poke out from its normal position between the two vertebrae. And so almost everyone over 40 has one or more bulging discs. Well, no shit. I did not know that. I got four. So do I get the booby prize because I got so many? But if the bulging material presses against an adjacent nerve, the condition can produce pain, and generally the rupture heals over time and the pain goes away. But sometimes it causes nerve compression and pain will persist. Some other additional issues from that would be joint degeneration from arthritis or reduced muscle tone caused by physical inactivity. A lot of my patients, they're elderly because they're on hospice, of course. We have some that are really, really weak, and I tell them, If all you do is just stand up and sit down and take a few steps, you know, every day, just to keep everything flowing and moving, and that's a good thing. Because I get a lot that once it gets to a certain, oh, my hospice, I'm just going to die. No, you don't have to. Just get up and move a little bit every day, and you'll keep everything moving, and you won't get that foot drop, and you won't get the contractures and stiffness and all that. Complex regional pain syndrome. Did we talk about that before?
You brought it up, but you didn't go into it because you really weren't sure what it was.
Okay. Yeah, I just happened to see it. So minor injury can set this painful condition off. So can a broken bone, a sprain or surgical incision, or any other number of injuries. Usually it's to your hand or foot. So before long, you're in a variety of painful symptoms. And it might not be at the injury site, but to adjacent locations, which is why you can have a lot of radiating pain. So that condition is used to be known as reflex sympathetic dystrophy, or RSD. And because it was thought to stem from an overreaction of your sympathetic nervous system, part of your autonomic nervous system that controls your heart rate, your blood pressure, your skin temperature, and now doctors are unsure of the cause. So, Bill, this is where you can jump in, Dr. Bill. In fact, complex regional pain syndrome is often called CRPS. So if you chime in anytime you'd like about it.
It's difficult to treat. Can you hear me? It's difficult to treat because it's hard to find the cause of the pain.
Okay.
I mean, it's not necessarily a bulging disc, and it is almost always associated with trauma. Even something as simple as a carpal tunnel release, it's an iatrogenic trauma created by the surgeon or the hand doctor. And there will be so much pain that medications are difficult to control the pain. And the cause of the pain, even after burning nerve roots and all kinds of treatments, is very difficult to treat. A lot of times the patient will end up on steroids just for that. But, yeah, CRPS does happen. And I've had a couple patients with real difficult to find the cause of the pain. The cause of the pain is mostly always traumatic, could be iatrogenic, but the source of the pain is difficult. We're not sure if it's psychosomatic or if it's some other pain path that we're not medically competent with just yet.
Is it a common between people between 40 and 60? So, I mean, can you have someone younger?
Yes, but generally it's in the elderly. Marble Lake Church Buck and an NXT. Oh, y'all got me.
Okay. Moving right along to fibromyalgia. I know we kind of touched on this a little bit before.
Yeah.
So fibromyalgia is a collection of symptoms that include widespread pain and tenderness. I know we've talked about, like, a lot of doctors don't, back in the past, now it's different.
Can you take all 3 hours and I'm going to pick you up on the first?
Came out, they just thought, you know, fibromyalgia, you just want to complain, you're hypochondriac, and blah, blah, blah. So now more doctors are understanding, you know, about it, and people are being diagnosed with it more. So it differs from arthritis in the pain is in muscles and tissues near the joints instead of inside the joints themselves. Also, unlike arthritis, it doesn't cause joint or muscle inflammation, nor does it destroy joints, or does it damage your internal organs either. It just hurts. That's it. So the main symptoms of fibromyalgia is aching all over. The pain may be a deep ache or burning sensation. And other signs and symptoms associated is chronic fatigue, digestive problems, difficulty sleeping, numbness, stiffness, tingling, headache, sensitivity to weather and temperature changes, pain during menstruation, dizziness, and mood changes. The people that I've seen, a friend of mine, this is back in the day now, you know, a bajillion years ago, when they first started noticing it, her biggest issue was her mood changes and her chronic fatigue and the numbness and the tingling. That's what she had. And, you know, she could never really describe it to her doctor. And it took a while. It took years before they would diagnose her with it. And I would say it was probably 2005, maybe a little bit later, by the time they really started.
It doesn't sound like chronic fatigue. I mean, that doesn't sound like fibromyalgia. To me, it sounds like a chronic Epstein-Barr virus infection.
Oh, I don't know. Well, she's already passed away from it. Not from that, but
yeah,
something else. But that was her biggest thing with those symptoms. But
yeah, those
symptoms.
Symptoms more in line. Yeah, that's more in line with a viral infection, with a cytomegalovirus, chronic Epstein-Barr, or even the parvo B19 chronic carriers of those viruses have those same symptoms, and a lot of doctors fail to check for them. So when they've checked for every possible musculoskeletal issue outside of that, they throw the label of fibromyalgia on it, which is very common. Doctors,
oh, okay.
It's like a diagnosis of
exclusion.
Isn't it
kind of like IBS? Isn't it kind of
like IBS?
It's not just you get IBS.
Yeah, but now there's tests for IBS. There's actually a test for IBS. Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? It's like, well, they rule out Crohn's and they rule out gastritis or ulcerative colitis and blah, blah, blah. Okay, you got IBS. Now they got IBS constipation and IBS and diarrhea. I mean, it's...
Right. Yep.
It was
formerly a diagnosis of exclusion, but now it can be formally diagnosed via testing.
Yeah, see, they misdiagnosed me with IBS. That's what they said. You got IBS. Come to find out, I got celiac and colitis.
Yeah. There you go.
20 years.
And there's a lot of misdiagnosis going on, and a lot of it has to do with the education of the physician or whoever the provider is that's working up they'll work up all the things that'll kill you, but there's certain things that, you know, latest research, and we try to go by when we practice our medicine, we try to stay up to date via CMEs and everything, but evidence-based medicine is how a lot of doctors have found out about like the chronic viral infections causing similar fibromyalgia symptoms. Chronic fatigue and neuropathies are very common with those. And so now you want to rule those out. Probably back when she got diagnosed, they excluded everything that they knew at that time and threw her just the label of fibromyalgia. Because she's a female, very common, very common.
Now, could a lot of it have to do with laziness? And I'm not trying to begrudge any doctor, but like you said, you rule out all the things that will kill you. Okay, well, then we're just going to put this label on you without saying you're a hypochondriac, you know, and just miss everything.
I don't want to judge the provider, but a lot of times medicine, our hands are held to do advanced testing by insurance companies and patients that can't afford. And so you have to diagnose
something. Or insurance.
Yeah, you have to
diagnose. Well, I'm not going
to
pay for that test, or we're not going to pay for that. We're not going to pay for, you know.
I've had patients die before I got CTs of the brain because they had to wait for prior authorization from insurance companies. So that there's a big bill going on right now, and legislature are trying to rectify that some way, some degree. But you know how politics are.
Yeah, I know. It's absolutely ridiculous.
We no longer practice medicine. We practice insurance. And every insurance company is different, and their formulary for medications and treatments are different. And it's very confusing for doctors where they don't even want to accept insurance anymore. They just want cash.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm lucky. I have the VA, and I have my Blue Cross Blue Shield. Where the VA slacks, I use the Blue Cross to pick up, which is, you know, right now I'm starting with orthopedics because that's the biggest problem I have. But so I'm lucky I have both. And I know a lot of people don't. You know, they got – and a lot of these – even a lot of these good insurance companies are crappy. I've got a $5,000 deductible for just myself. With Blue Cross. So the first $5,000 I have to pay for. You know, I think I go to the doctor maybe twice in a year, three times if I'm lucky, because you got to go for your annual physical with the VA. So, and that's why I would use, like, you know, saying I would use the VA for my, hey, look, I'm sick or whatever, and and go that, and then anything big, I would use the Blue Crosses. But yeah, that sucks. They got a $5,000 deductible. For headaches, everybody's had a headache, and there are different types of headaches. I know we've gone over a couple of these. So attention headache is the most common type, and honestly, it can go from mild to severe. Many experience a dull, a tight, a pressurized pain that it's in your forehead, your scalp, and the back of the neck, or on both sides of your head. It all depends on you. Occasionally, the pain may be a burning or a throbbing. I've never personally had a headache where it felt burning before. That's something new to me. I don't know if anybody else has had a burning feeling for a headache. Usually it feels like my head's in a vice grip. Honestly, it's like a pressure. Occasionally I've had burning. Have you guys ever had a headache that felt like it was burning?
You can get a cervicogenic headache that feels like a burning sensation. Cervicogenic can also cause a sensitive headache. Then, like, non-pulsatile. Dull.
Oh, okay. But, yeah, the burning, I mean, that's just something I've just never heard of that, but, hey.
Yeah, but imagine you got a pinched nerve in your neck going up to your head, well, like a pinched nerve going down your leg that burns. It feels like that, but in the head.
Oh, okay. Well, I've had that. I've had that burning where it feels like, you know, it's... after I had my steroid injection, the burning. Yeah, that's exactly what, so that's in your head. Okay, cool. So now we all know. Many causes of tension headache appear to result from contraction of the muscles on the outside of your skull. There's some evidence that enlargement of the blood vessels in your scalp. Don't be saying?
Yeah, the most common is the trapezius muscle and the sternocleoid mastoid muscle and the scalene muscle. They can cause headaches.
Yes, and your sternocleomastoid, isn't that the longest muscle in your body?
I don't know about that, but I do know that's the one that causes torticollis when you wake up in the morning and you can't turn your head one direction.
Oh.
But it's when you turn your head and you feel that long muscle, it attaches to the sternum, it attaches to the your scapula, and it attaches up to the mastoid. I don't know if that's the longest muscle in the body. I'm not sure about that. I would think that the quadriceps would be the longest one, but not sure.
The longest muscle of the body is... Oh, don't tell me you can't load the page. No, that's what my anatomy teacher taught us. So the largest
did you Google it?
Is your glute. Yes, I did. Your gluteus maximus is the largest.
Yeah, the strongest one. Not your back.
And the longest is the sartorius, a long thin muscles that run from the outside of the upper thigh down across the leg to the inside of the knees. And my teacher lied. He said that the sternocleidomastoid was the longest muscle in the body. He lied.
No, it's not. I didn't think it was. I thought it had to do with the leg muscles, but yeah. So the sartorius, and part of the sartorius is going to be that iliotibial band that connects to. I think that's where it comes from. But it's also you have this iliotibial band, and you have the what is it? The latimus medius. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm distracted.
No, you're fine. And I apologize to everybody that I've ever said that to. And if I can find that teacher in Georgia, I'm going to slap them.
So is the even though the gluteus maximus is the largest muscle, is it the strongest muscle in the body?
No, it's not.
You mentioned the back.
Sister,
and I don't think
while there are others, both are well documented. This one's a bit harder to just, since there are different types of strength, such as absolute strength, dynamic strength, and strength endurance, there are a few candidates for a top spot. So if you're talking about absolute strength, meaning the ability to generate maximum force, then the winner is the masseter located in the jaw.
Yeah.
Its main function is mastication or chewing. Well, that was just wow. I am crushed. That just wow. I'm upset. Oh, I've been spewing bullshit, thinking my teacher was part of right. Okay, anywho.
Never assume that somebody's
yeah,
going to give
when
you
when your teacher
today.
Tells you something, you expect it to be right.
When your doctor tells you you have fibromyalgia and you have a chronic Epstein-Barr virus infection, you expect them to be right too. Remember, I did once say, you be the expert of your own afflictions. You need to know more about your conditions than your provider does.
So many of your tension headaches can be triggered by stressful events like your job. I don't know. Everybody's job right now is stressful in this economy. Everybody's under some kind of stress. Nurses, doctors, the first responders, the fire department, the military. I mean, think of how stressful. You know what? It's getting so bad now. Restaurant people, their jobs are stressful. Because these are buttholes who are 18, 19, 20-something years old. They're like, I don't want to work. And so you see one person working at McDonald's on a whole shift to do everything. And that's why they're having to close the inside and they're only doing drive-through. And I mean, yeah, right now, everybody's job is causing tension headaches.
I'm happy to see when you pull up now to some places where you have senior citizens now working, like the drive-thru or working at these places, because a lot of people one time didn't want to hire those people. They wanted those young bucks and them high school kids because they could pay them chump change, but they raised the minimum wage, and these kids today on these video games, they don't want to work. And so it does create an opportunity for, like, you know, senior citizens and other people to get these kind of jobs that they can actually do for like 4 hours, you know. So,
oh yeah,
like
you
that.
Know when I worked before 20 something years ago, before I even got into, like, I was a CNA first, and then I went to nursing school. I worked all the restaurants, all the fast food restaurants. I worked them all, and you know we always had somebody who was retired worked the lobby for breakfast, someone to do lunch, and someone to do dinner.
Yep. And remember, Walmart used to have your greeters be a lot of senior citizens. They would come in and greet you. And now
this generation is the handout generation, and they're like, how dare you expect me to work? And so piss on them. Put someone to work, retired veterans, retired people, period. Even honestly, you get a lot of Down syndrome, a lot of those for your high functioning, they do a lot of lower paid jobs, but still it gives them a sense of purpose. And you know, with the way the Social Security is, the elders have to do something. So driving to work can be stressful. A lot of idiots out there. An argument with a family member or friend or coworker or your boss. Believe it or not, staring at a computer. If you work from home, you're in school and you're doing online. If you're at work and you use a computer, take a break every hour for, like, get up, stand up, stretch, go to the bathroom, get a drink, whatever, rest your eyes from that computer. They actually have screens that helps with eye strain on your desktops and stuff now. That helps out a lot. Migraines, up to 17% of women and 6% of men experience a more painful variety of headache known as a migraine. They suck. They can go from a few hours to days with no break. I know personally for myself, I've actually had to go lay down and take a nap. And when I mean nap, I'm like, you might have to just go to sleep, because I would sleep for 3 hours, and sometimes I'd wake up and I'd still have it. Or if I go to bed and I wake up, I have woke up with it. And I think I could count on both hands in the last 30 years that I've actually had to go up to the ER with a migraine. And but I would wait a couple of days before I would go up. I mean, I would be doing everything. I start with Tylenol, the Motrin, and then the Furoset. And now that has stopped working. So, and I'm very limited, I guess, currently on migraine medication. So migraines generally produce a throbbing pain on one side of your head, often your temple or forehead. Usually, there's a lot of things that go to the lights effect, make it worse. Sound makes it worse. See noises, bright lights. You may become nauseated and vomit. Not everybody vomits. I've had it all. You know, some doctors would tell me I don't have a true migraine because I don't vomit. But you don't need to vomit to have a migraine. So the pain can range from moderate to severe. Most migraines only occur for a few hours. So, like I said, sometimes you could lay down and go to sleep, sit in a dark room, put cotton balls in your ear, and just, you know, and it'll stop. So migraines are once thought to be chiefly related to blood circulation. The blood vessels in your brain, neck, and scalp will get really tight, reducing the blood flow to your brain. And this tightening is followed by an expansion of the vessels to larger than their normal size, hence the swelling and the pain. They also thought it was an imbalance of brain chemicals. Several chemicals may be related in some way to the development of migraines. The serotonin. With a migraine, your serotonin levels, they say, usually drop, which I had no idea about that one. About 10% of people with recurrent migraines get warning symptoms. They call it an aura. Often involve tingling sensations, visual distortions, like blurred vision or zigzagging light. Mine is my eyeballs start to hurt. My actual eye, it hurts to touch. Mine have been so bad, my head feels like it weighs about 20, like a 20-pound bowling ball. And that's how I know I'm getting one. But I've lucked out, thank God, since I've been having a lot of this dry needling and acupuncture. I've lucked out in physical therapy on my spine, on my neck. I've only had one headache in the last couple of weeks, and I was having them every day. So there are people that do suffer migraines every day. Huh?
You want to know some cool facts?
What?
You know, if you say migraine, everyone thinks about a headache, but you can get ocular migraines. And you can also get migraines in organs. You should look up the types of migraines. It's fascinating.
I've heard of ocular migraine, but not of an organ.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yep.
I will have to look that up.
It's not just a headache. But look at the symptoms of ocular migraine, and that may be what you're having. Look at the symptoms of the ocular migraine, and that may be what you're experiencing since it's in your eyes. The other thing that will cause...
I got an appointment with my neurologist tomorrow, so we're going to find out.
You be the expert. You look it up. And then the other thing with the eye, with the unilateral eye pain, consider cluster headache, okay, especially in the man.
Okay, flashing lights. No, don't have that. I'm just looking at some of the... Oh, okay, here we go. Okay, that could be what I have then. Strong smell, like perfume. Actually, what starts sometimes is the hand sanitizer that I have. It's a spray. Sometimes it can set me off, too. Food additives such as artificial sweetener, bright or flickering lights, or lighting, caffeine withdrawal. Certain foods such as smoked meat and aged cheese, cigarette smoke, lack of sleep, stress and anxiety, fatigue, hormonal changes, weather changes, dehydration, alcoholic drinks like red wine, heat or high altitude.
What about an abdominal
The blind spots expand, making it difficult to drive safely or read using the affected eye. A colorful light ring that's wavy or zigzag or surrounds the blind spot. A blind spot that slowly migrates across your field of vision. I don't have that. A migraine that lasts between 4 and 42 hours. Okay. Sensitivity to lighter sounds, vision loss, nausea, and it feels worse when you move your head. See, I've got that. That's how mine have been. It hurts more to move my head. And that's why I end up having to lay down. Also, since I got my new glasses, a lot of my headaches have gone away, which I knew that my glasses had, and that's why they want you to check your eyes once a year. So you can have hormone fluctuations, your diet, environment, your lifestyle can all attribute, and medication for migraines. So some other chronic pain, we already talked about IBS, antispasm in your bowels. For the most part, I would say a majority of people have the diarrhea, but apparently they do have constipation, IBS, and there are different medications for it. But yeah, it's rough when you have IBS. So mouth, jaw, and face pain. So some people experience chronic pain. Hey, Bobby, why don't you do one of the little spiel? It's 8 o'clock, almost 8 o'clock.
All right.
Just in case somebody's just tuning in.
Yeah, no problem. If you're just tuning in to us, be sure to check out our national Facebook page by typing in the search box, all capital letters, Defenders 7. Before you hit that join button, just know we expect all of our members and future members to participate throughout everything we do here in the Defender 7. Check out and subscribe to our website, all lowercase letters, www.defender7.com. On our site, you'll find that we have a store and a donate button. 100% of all sales from the store and any donations we bring in go back to our community throughout all 50 states in a time of need. So please, by all means, purchase something from our store or hit that donate button. the only way we're able to do what we do here in the Defender 7. Help us to help you and your community. Check out and subscribe to our YouTube channel. We're on MeWe. Click on Community. Scroll down, Defender 7, Humanitarian American Patriot Group. Yes, folks, we are not a militia. For tonight's show that you're listening to, or future broadcasts that we have, and the number to call to participate is area code 914-205-5773. If you're too shy to talk on the phone, we also have a chat room, which is also live during our broadcasts right here on Blog Talk. Now, back to you.
All righty.
Question. Hold on,
yeah.
Question. Bobby.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm getting on the internet. www.defenders, the number 7,
yeah,
the letter 7, the word 7.
V-I-I.
No. Victor.
Defenders V. Go ahead.
Yeah. With the V.
Is it
Victor?
Yeah, got it. V-I-I. Is it Defenders with an S?
.com.
Okay. Found it. Awesome. There you go. V-I-I.
Yeah, we used the Roman numeral when we did it. Oh, it took us forever to make sure we did not copyright our name.
Is it the same for Facebook, V-I-I?
Yeah, but on Facebook it's all capital letters.
Oh, all caps on Facebook, but the V-I-I also, okay. Cool. Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, the only thing that's lowercase letters is our website.
Cool.
And when you go on Blog Talk, you can actually type up Blog Talk, and then you type in Defender 7, and all of our previous shows and current is also on there. So you can download a show from anything from Monday. From the very beginning, we had all different types. We were kind of trying to feel it out what we wanted to do. We have survival shows from the very beginning, survival shows, the medical, the current events. And we were doing history for the longest time on Saturdays.
Personal interviews.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've had a lot of personal interviews with people with different things. So we're just trying to, you know, sometimes we will change it up, like Saturday. Right now I'm doing trivia, but I might go back to history and do a different type of history. It's just because you can only do so much trivia, you know. Thing is, kids don't learn a whole lot of history. That's why we started the history. We actually did the history of each branch of the military. We did the history of medical, first the fire, the police department. We've done, like I said, history of pick a subject. We've probably done it. So if anybody has any ideas of a show, message one of us, post it on the Blog Talk, let us know. We will, if we can find information on it, we will do it, believe it or not. So with all of that, or as my son likes to call Saturday, he likes to call it Shit Show Saturday, because you never know what's going to happen on Saturday. Well, that's usually Thursday night now. You never know what you're going to get on Thursday night. So Thursday night is just strictly whatever current events happen to be going on, you know, at that moment in time, is usually, or venting, whatever. So mouth, jaw, and face pain. Some people experience chronic pain in their mouth, jaws, and face. Often this pain is a result of dental problems, like cavities, gum disease, getting punched in the face, or injury. I mean, honestly, you can be impaled. I mean, there's just so many different things that people have had injuries to the face. So burning mouth syndrome, it's been a while since I've heard about this one. You may have a burning sensation on your tongue, your lips, or widespread burning that involves your entire mouth. It affects women 7 times as often. Generally, it's middle-aged or older adults. So some of the possible causes, chronic infection, reflux of stomach acid, blood diseases, hormonal imbalance, and side effects of medications. Some, which is, I'm not sure if this has anything to do with it, but some medications cause that, what was it, that dry mouth, and it feels like you have cotton mouth. And what's it called? Biotin? That mouth squish stuff? Some medications cause excessively dry mouth. Trigeminal neuralgia is also known as Doolaroo, and this form of pain can develop when blood vessels come in contact with a trigeminal nerve, putting pressure on that nerve. And then the trigeminal nerve branches throughout your face, and that controls facial sensations and some muscles involved in chewing. Trigeminal neuralgia can cause electric shock-like pain on one side of your face. Oh, is that when you, like, twitch your neck too fast, that sharp pain shoots up your neck into your face? Is that what that, is that the nerve that gets affected?
My cranial nerve number 7.
Not the trigeminal?
But that could be, no, trigeminal comes out of the right in front of your ear. There is a off or a little hole where the trigeminal, if you tap on your, right in front of your ear, right in front of the tragus, you can feel that shock sometimes, and that's your trigeminal nerve.
Oh! Okay, so if you move, you know, when you move your neck too fast, you get that twinge. Which nerve is that one?
Yeah, that's one of the musculoskeletal nerves. Usually, it's one of your cervical nerve roots that cause that.
Oh, okay.
You have to look at the dermis.
Kind of like your funny bone, but it's not funny. There's nothing funny about it when you hit your funny bone.
Ain't nothing funny about it. That's for sure.
Nope. It's like hitting your shin on the trailer hitch.
It's not even a bone. It's the ulna nerve, and it's between your olecranon of your elbow and the condyle of your humerus.
So why do they call it the funny bone if it's not even a bone?
Got me. Why do they call a penis a boner?
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's because you laugh when you do it, and you're like, oh, my God, oh, my God, you know, and you try to laugh it off. Maybe that's what they call the funny bone, when you hit it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it hurts like a bugger. It's actually one of the tests that I do for ulnar neuropathy is if you, on the medial side of your elbow, between your elbow and that little bone there's a little groove in there, you can take your finger and tap in there and feel the electricity to your little pinky and ring finger. People who fall down on their elbow, can damage or impinge that nerve and cause that neuropathy down the arm.
Or
and a lot of times they can develop
or
a complex.
Or if you're doing combatives wrong, if you're doing combatives wrong and you don't have your elbow next to your body and your arm naturally goes, hey, I want to put it up, and your combatives partner puts his knee right into your elbow and rams that little nerve right inside the joint. That's how I damaged mine. I kept
you
doing
wanna,
it,
you
and
hear
he's like, dude, go ahead.
Yep. Yeah, another funny diagnosis is, yeah, I think it's kind of cute, but it's serious too. But look up Saturday Night Palsy.
Saturday night palsy. Like, why do I have to be like one of those? Is this going to be one of those don't look it up and you won't look it up?
This is this happens to Bobby all the time, Saturday night palsy.
Hold on. Oh, look, you know what comes up? Saturday Night Live. Hold on. Well, that's it. I didn't say anything. Hold on.
Oh, okay.
The origin of Saturday Night Palsy. The term Saturday Night Palsy has become synonymous with the radial nerve compression in the arm resulting from direct pressure against a firm object. Typically follows deep sleep in the arm after alcohol intoxication. Wow, okay. The commonly accepted origin of the phrase is association of Saturday night with carousing. We offer an alternative explanation. We think the term Saturday night palsy was introduced mistakenly as a simplification of the Saturn palsy. Oh, yeah, okay. Which is commonly the common complication of lead poisoning. Yeah, okay.
So let's say you pass out and you pick your arm up above your hand and in your armpit. And your armpit's either leaning on the table or like the back of a chair. You got that pushing into your armpit. It causes that Saturday night palsy.
Oh, that's what that is?
Yeah.
I've had that maybe a handful of times in my life.
Oh, yeah. It must have been some good tequila.
It's what I call it. No, it's one tequila, two tequila, three tequila, four.
Three tequila at three. Three tequila, you forgot, the clothes fall off. Then it's four tequila floor.
Tequila is the only thing, honestly, that makes me hot. And it does make your clothes fall off. You sweat. Oh, my God. It's the only thing. Anything else I drink, fine. It's just tequila. Why?
You know another condition that Bobby has, too? He's got holiday heart syndrome. And the reason why you're getting that is because you have celiacs, and that it's made from the agave plant.
Oh, I knew it was from agave. Okay, cool. So another one is temporal mandibular jaw, or TMJ. Located on each side of your face, they connect your jaw to your skull. A common symptom is pain in your jaw, face, neck, or ear. Other signs may include headaches, jaw locking or catching, pops or clicks in your jaw during normal use. Honestly, I've been told about TMJ is resting your phone on your shoulder while you're talking instead of holding it with your hand. A doctor told me about stop doing that, and that's why they have those cradle rests on secretaries, and that's why they go into the earpieces, because a lot of secretaries have TMJ.
Yeah, I don't know about that. That would cause more torticollis in my mind, but TMJ, the most common cause is grinding your teeth when you sleep.
Well, that too. No, seriously, that's what they told everybody. That's why, you know, when you rest your phone on your neck, between your neck and your shoulder. That's what they were saying. I don't know. I'm not, like I said, this is a peculiar
ago. You can tell a person, by one, looking at their teeth, they're going to be ground down. They're going to be like off. Like a lot of their teeth are going to look like molars when they're supposed to be incisors. And then two, you can look at the masseter muscle. We talked about that, and it's going to be hypertrophied. It's going to be enlarged. So they're going to look like they have mumps, even though they don't. The muscle's gotten stronger because of all the grinding that they're doing, whether it's a medication and anxiety or sleep-induced stress. but grinding your teeth or clenching down and biting real hard for long periods of time causes that masseter muscle to get hypertrophied, and it can lead to arthritis in the temporal mandibular joint, the TMJ. You can also get rheumatoid in the TMJ, too. That's not good, which is the pannus formation in the joint. Yeah, pannus is what forms from rheumatoid. You get pannus between the joints, and it starts dislocating the joints and causing deviations of the joint. And then it becomes solidified and causes what they call ankylosis, or another word, it fuses, basically. It becomes fused. Very, 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 very debilitating. But now there are treatments that slow it down, the rheumatoid arthritis. Another condition I think Bobby has, and this is a funny one too, and you may have heard of this one too, it's called holiday heart syndrome.
If Bobby's even listening. But she never does.
We're
talking about it. So we could be talking about Bobby. He wouldn't have a clue. Huh?
That's Phil.
We know he's got,
that's all Phil.
We know he's got,
he tries to
we know he's got Saturday
everybody
night.
Else.
He's encouraging participation.
Okay, so overuse strain injury. We talked a little bit about some of this stuff. These injuries result in overuse of your muscles and tendons, mainly those in your hands, wrists, and arms. Most noticeably, the symptoms is pain. But an overuse injury can also cause tingling, weakness, numbness, swelling, and stiffness. People who are on, and this is part of the reason why they have those ergonomic mouse pads, the mouse, the keyboard, anyone who's on a computer all day, meat cutters, assembly line employees, anything where you constantly do repetitive movements with your hands or your elbows, your shoulders, and all of that. Carpal tunnel is the most common recognized overused injury, and that's constant strain on your wrist, which can inflame the tendon that's located below your carpal ligament, and that stretches across the palm side of your hand. And as with the tendons become inflamed and swollen, they press against the nearby nerve, also located beneath the carpal ligament, henceforth carpal tunnel syndrome. Most often the result is intermittent numbness, tingling, or pain that starts in your wrist and moves down to your thumb and your first two or three fingers. A lot of things, a lot of times they start with your physical therapy and your, you know, your Motrin, your ice and heat and back. You know, that's usually what they do. Because I know orthopedic surgeons, they're all about, you know, they want to make that money, but they try to do the least invasive first. And now they're doing, and this is what my ortho doctor told me, and my physical therapist. They both said that a lot of people with supposed carpal tunnel actually have their pain starting from their neck. And that's why they wanted to be careful to make sure that it's not my neck and it's not, instead of being carpal tunnel. So that's why they do the MRI of your cervical spine, your shoulder, and your, you know. And what we found out is a lot of my pain is coming from my neck. So, and shoulder, of course, because of all the jacked up crap I got going. But most of my nerve pain is from my neck.
Yeah, and the
I
hands.
I mean, don't get me wrong.
It's like the big thumb and your index finger, the big thumb and the index finger, if you touch the tips of your big thumb and your index finger and look at your hand, does it make a number six?
What do you mean?
Touch your index finger tip to the tip of your thumb and then look at it. Is it a number six?
Yeah.
Cranial nerve number six. Your cervical spine, your C6 nerve can cause symptoms similar to carpal tunnel. So that's why you need to do a nerve conduction velocity test to determine whether it's coming from the median nerve or the cranial nerve. I mean, the cervical nerve.
What was weird about my hand, both of them, if you take, I take my thumb and my pinky, and I touch my pinky to the tip of my thumb, on my left hand,
uh-huh.
It looked all three of my middle finger, all three fingers, are straight up and down. On my right hand, I cannot straighten any of my fingers. They're all curved. I cannot straighten my fingers. Not
so you
even,
can't make the Boy Scout. No Boy Scout symbol for you.
Yeah, no Boy Scout. Yeah, exactly. I can't even physically straighten my ring finger on my right hand. I cannot do it. It will not let me. Not even to manipulate with my other hand. I can't do it. So I know I've got nerve damage. I'm left-handed.
You're left-handed?
I'm left-handed,
okay.
Right-handed dominant. The only thing, I only do like three or four things with my left hand. Everything else is my right. I know it's weird. There's very few of us in this world.
That's just you just need physical therapy for that. It's just
no,
that your tendons are a lot tighter on one side than the other.
Well, that's why I also have the tens unit, and I use that.
Mm-hmm.
And when
now,
I put it on my elbow.
If you want to differentiate carpal tunnel from cervical radiculopathy, there's two tests that we do in clinic, and one of them is called Phalen's test, where you hyperflex your wrists and you put them together and hold it there for 30 minutes, like 30 seconds, and if the three fingers go numb, the thumb, index, and or middle go numb, that's a sign of carpal tunnel because you're actually pinching the nerve off. A lot of people will sleep in the fetal position where they have their wrists bent in and tucked in, and by bending them in, they'll wake up with their hands being numb, especially in those three fingers. That's a sign of carpal tunnel.
Oh, yeah.
That's what
I do.
So that fetal position.
I do sleep like that. I do
mm-hmm.
sleep like
so
that. I'll sleep with my.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I was gonna say when I sleep, my right hand always goes under my face or my side of my head.
Uh-huh.
And my hand
wakes up
and my hand's numb.
Yep, it's because you're bending in and you're pinching off the median nerve going through the carpal tunnel, and it causes that. A solution for that is to wear a glove that has a little piece of plastic palmer side of your wrist to prevent you from bending your wrist in. A lot of people will go out and buy very tight carpal tunnel splints, and it causes swelling. It does not have to be tight. It's just meant to prevent you from bending your wrist, and that is one very conservative treatment for carpal tunnel. And I tell my patients,
I have two of those.
Wear it to bed.
I know. I need to wear them. I know. I know. I have one. I have two, actually. And you can pull the bar out and flip it over and use it for the other hand. It changes the way it's bent. And it does work. And I should wear it at night. I really should.
So if you take both of your hands and you put your arms parallel to the ground, and you bend your wrists down, and you put them together to keep them down, and if within 30 seconds those three fingers go numb, that's one side of carpal tunnel. We call it the Phalen's test, Phalans, Phalen. Another test we do is on the palmer side of the wrist, where the palm meets the arm. At the palmar crease, you'll see two little lines going across. They call the palmar creases. If you tap right there with a finger into the carpal tunnel and you feel electricity in your fingertips, that's another sign of carpal tunnel.
Ah, okay.
And we call that the Tinel test. T-I-N-N-E-L.
All I know is that nerve conduction, instead I have minor, mild carpal tunnel, nagel do shit for it, which is fine with me. You know, like I said, I get that occasion where the three fingers will curl up and it looks like I have my thumb and my pointer fingers making a gun, like trigger finger, whatever you want to call it. So, and if I bend my wrist inward, like bend it down and put just gentle pressure, it actually releases some of the pain, feels better when I do it. Just
yeah,
a little bit of pressure, and I huh?
You probably have some tendonitis, and a steroid injection would help out a lot.
Uh-huh. I bet it would.
Mm-hmm. And you could also have a calcium deficiency. That could be causing it, or magnesium, or potassium.
It might be more magnesium because I take calcium every day.
But do you take it with vitamin D?
Yeah. Yeah.
And are you on a diuretic?
No.
Okay.
No.
Are you taking hydrochlorothiazide?
No.
Okay.
I take amlodipine and
a calcium channel blocker, right?
Yeah.
Amlodipine. I can't remember if it's a calcium channel or not. Valsartan, I think. I think the sartans are the calcium channel.
Well, I also have isothiazide
mononitrate,
but I'm almost out, and I guess my doctor doesn't want me on it anymore because she didn't reorder it, effer.
Oh, no, that don't mean nothing. You need to call your doctor because things slip through the crack. You shouldn't discontinue that medication if you're on it, especially for arrhythmias.
I know, and that's the whole problem. I'm like, if you want me to take amlodipine, fine, whatever. I need the isothiazide because it's got that continuous nitro in it for me, and... Yeah, so, anywho, let's get back on track. We have, let's see, we got.
You talked about carpal tunnel. What about fasciitis of the plantar?
Hold on, I think that might be what's left. Hold on. We got peripheral neuropathy, osteopathic.
Diabetic neuropathy.
Neuralgia.
Yeah.
Hey, they don't have that in here.
It's a very common pain issue that we deal in pain medicine with. A lot of times it has to do with being flat-footed and or there's a tendon that attaches to the arch of your foot to pull that arch up. And if you lose that arch, especially under weight-bearing conditions, as you're walking, you get the arch, then you get flat-footed. You get the arch, you get flat-footed. And as you're walking, it starts playing with the fascia of the plantar surface of the foot, causing inflammation and pain. A lot of people come in with severe foot pain because of that. A lot of military guys putting the boots on the ground and or walking on metal decks tend to lead to that fasciitis. So a lot of our vets have it.
Yes. Actually, I ended up with it. I didn't have it in basic training and AID. By the time I got stationed at Fort Campbell, my arch was almost flat. And so, and also another thing is if you wear flip-flops and like that, and a lot of women, that's why they get it. And I had to start buying those arches to put in my shoes to help keep my arch. Because, yeah, mine went almost flat.
A lot of problems that I have with females, especially the middle age to the elderly population, females who wear high heels frequently end up developing hallux valgus, where the big toe deviates lateral and actually even crosses over the top of the other toes at times. And that causes a deformity and a pain. Hallux valgus.
Yeah, that's why I don't wear pointy shoes. My heels, I don't wear heels. I wear platforms or the wedges, and I have room for all of my toes to fit in the front. I don't wear closed-toed shoes, except sneakers, of course. But for my dress shoes, none of them are closed-toed. I learned that the hard way when I was younger, and I wore the stilettos and the high heels and all of that crap. Yeah, and that's why
I have a question for you. I have a question for you, Colonel. I don't know the answer to this question, even though I do work in pain management. And you don't have to know the answer either because I can do my own research. But I've had all kinds of pain, including, herniated discs and pinched nerves, but the worst pain I have ever experienced is when I fractured a bone. And why is that? Why is bone pain more severe than any other pain I've experienced in my life?
You know, I've heard that before. Now, could it simply be because the bone is trying to heal?
Honestly, I don't know the answer, and that's why I kind of threw it out there.
Oh.
And it may not be the worst pain. I mean, the worst pain might be a kidney stone or for a man, or the worst pain might be a heart attack. You know, those are things I haven't experienced. But in my personal experience, the worst pain I've ever experienced was a fracture.
Okay. Well, this is what this says. I mean, pain is your body's natural response when you break one of your bones immediately after you suffer the injury. An intense ache or sharp pain is typically produced, also depending on which damage you've done, too, when you broke that bone. So there's three stages of pain following a bone fracture, and they're referred to as acute, subacute, and chronic. I'm trying to see here. Let's see why. Oh, so the subacute pain, what they're saying is the healing. Also, they say it hurts more because you're not using it. It's in a cast. So you're going to be stiff as crap when you get out of the cast, depending on where it's at. In all honesty, I've had the only bone I've ever broke was the one on the top of my foot. And I know, okay, funny story, haha. My kid's dad pissed me off and I went to kick him, and my foot literally went underneath the door. Completely. Under the door.
Ouch.
Yeah. The bone from my big toe, midway up my foot, I broke it.
Was it the metatarsal?
The tarsal meta. Well, I bent my toe, my big toe, completely went underneath my foot. And when they did the X-ray,
oh man, ouch.
Yeah, the joint, you know, that little joint right in the middle, I broke that bone, and it was just kind of like sitting there.
Wow.
Oh yeah, it was awful. Awful pain.
I bet that
now,
was
if you
painful,
break your foot,
yeah,
if you break your foot or your leg, honestly, I think it might hurt more once you start you're able to walk on it, if you do, because you're putting all your body weight on it. So I don't know.
I broke my big toe and my ankle and my little toe and my foot, and it was the most severe pain I ever experienced. But it was acute, like right at the injury, and for a couple of days surrounding the initial injury. But then it all went away. I mean, there was just aches and pains after that, but not that severe pain. And I'm trying to think that it's possibly related to something called compartment syndrome.
Oh yeah, that's possible.
That's very painful.
But honestly,
compartment syndrome.
Honestly, the most painful thing I think I ever had was kidney stones.
Wow.
I kid you not.
The reason I asked that question is because I do have several patients that I'm treating for multiple myeloma. And that's where you have these erosions in the bone from tumors that are developing in the bone marrow. So
I've got a couple of those.
A little holes in your bone, different places of your body. You start getting holes in your bones, make them more brittle and easy for pathological fracture. But if I had bone pain from my fracture, I'm wondering if they're having bone pain from these erosions, or is it just when they have a fracture?
I mean, Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's all perceived. I mean, however, what severely painful to me may not be to you. Like my lower back pain, but the difference between my lower back pain, it's chronic. And when I broke my toe, that went away after 6 to 12 weeks. I'm fine now. But my lower back, 15 to 30 minutes where I could do light housework, any yard work, whatever, and I'm done. I sit down and I rest for like 15, 20 minutes and I can go back and do it again. Driving for anything over 5 to 6 hours, I have to keep taking breaks because of my lower back. So honestly, I think I'd rather have a broken bone than what I've
recommendation
got.
My recommendation for driving is 45 minutes and then at least a 5-minute break to avoid problems with, herniated disc, but more so to avoid developing complications from possible blood clots. Sitting too long can lead to blood clots in the legs, especially in your calf muscles. More commonly in the calf muscles. It's usually the 2 or 3 hour flights that commonly cause those DVTs in the calf. But as you start getting older and you have comorbid issues such as diabetes, high blood pressure, atherosclerosis, the possibilities for developing DVTs are higher. So just as a general rule of thumb, I just say 45 minutes, take a break. 45, and most people, they're in a hurry to get where they're going. So 2-3 hours later, they finally get out of the car when they need to put up fuel. And the next day, they come to the clinic saying, oh, my calves are hurting. And sure
like,
enough,
when we drove,
positive.
When we drove from Wichita to Knoxville, is 1,000 miles. Going there was not the issue. It was coming home that was the problem. And that was just the amount of activity that we had to do that day that we left. But we would stop every 2 hours and change. And see, when I had my heart attack back in, I was 42, my cardiologist told me every hour or 2 hours I have to stop and pull over and rest for a few minutes, go to the bathroom, whatever, get out, stretch, and sit. Because, honestly, because it's the strain of, and this is what I think it might be, if I'm a passenger, I can lay back, I can read, I can whatever. But if you're driving, you're so focused on driving, you got control of that vehicle, and your body is tense. And that's what puts a strain on your heart and on your back, your hips, and everything.
That's why when you're taking blood pressure, if the legs are retracted when they're sitting down, you're going to get a higher blood pressure in the upper body. So that when you
now,
take
why
a blood
they have
pressure,
you uncross your legs?
That you should uncross your legs and actually extend them slightly. You should not have your legs pulled back behind the chair or pulled back at all. Your legs should be extended because it pushes the blood up in the upper body. When we're auscultating for heart murmurs, I have you do a squat, which pushes all the blood up into the upper body, and it can have that murmur come out because I've increased the pressure on your heart by having you squat. Sitting and having your legs retracted pushes most of the blood into your upper body. So your blood pressure is going to be higher at the brachial artery when they're measuring your blood pressure. So that's why you're supposed to extend your legs and have them sit back, slightly reclined, and measure at the level of the heart.
Oh, okay.
Most people don't know how to take blood pressure, and a lot of readings are very erroneous, especially with anxiety, white coat, and then having their legs retracted. So you take their blood pressure when you don't know how to take blood pressure, and now you got a person on blood pressure medications that don't have to be on it.
Well, that's why whenever we do ours for hospice, I have three ways Okay, my dog's having a stroke. He's being retarded. Oh, sorry. I will use the wrist cuff. Yes, I know it's not as accurate. I understand that.
Not at all.
As a manual. I know.
Never use COPD or lung issues. If a person has a pulmonary issue, never use a wrist cuff if somebody has COPD or a pulmonary issue.
Why?
Hold your breath. What's going to happen? Your blood pressure is going to go up. Hold your breath and your blood pressure is going to go up.
Because
I think of a COPD patient that has pursed lip breathing. Air trapping in their lungs, right? Air trapping in their lungs.
Yeah.
Which is going to increase their blood pressure, and so their blood pressure is going to be abnormally high. You can take that wrist cuff and do it to a perfectly healthy person and have them hold their breath. Or have them exhale all the air, have them breathe just irregular, just change your breathing habits just for fun, and notice the differences in the pressure you're going to get every single time. That wrist monitor. And if you don't have it at the right height, especially like level of the heart, or even in a reclined place, a patient that's laying down on the bed, that wrist monitor is not going to give you an accurate
pressure. Well, that's why we have them put their wrist across their chest and rest it and don't move. This is what we do. Okay, we get a baseline, for one thing, when we get patients, and I'll ask them, what does your blood pressure normally run? And I'll do the wrist cuff. If it's like way out there in left field, I mean either super high or really low, I'm like, okay, we're going to go old school, and I'll check it manually. And I even have the one with the battery, like you do in a doctor's office. I have one of those.
Yeah, on the brachial.
So
on the brachial artery.
I have all three of them.
I just don't think that a professional medical person should be using a wrist blood pressure monitoring device. It's great for just at home checking yourself, you know, once in a while. But I've seen so many inaccuracies with blood pressure on those that I don't trust them. And if you have the option of using a automatic cuff on the brachial artery, you know, I think that is going to be a little more accurate. And then the manual blood pressure cuff as well. But body habitus is very important. And a lot of doctors' offices
another reason why I use a wrist cuff. Because I've got patients whose wrists are so tiny in their arm that the manual swallows them. And it's hard to get an accurate blood pressure on them.
You're using the wrong cuff size, Mom. You're supposed to have several cuff sizes.
I understand that. I don't have a pediatric cuff. That's the problem. We're for adults, and we don't have the smaller, not right above pediatric, the small adult, we don't have those. We only have the medium and large.
Ask them to get you one. Just say you've been studying, just talk to your doctor. She'd be like, hey, look, I've been studying blood pressure, and I think I would be able to do a more accurate blood pressure if I had this available to me. And if they say go pound sand, then you're stuck.
No, I'm going to have to go buy my own. the other thing is, when we get a patient who's going from regular, whatever, to where they start getting into terminal agitation and they're getting ready to transition, I do manual, straight up manual, no matter what, because it's a lot more, honestly, because half the time those wrist cuffs or the battery ones, you know, the ones you use in the doctor's office, they don't work.
The first thing the provider's going to ask you is, what are the vitals?
No, I know.
And they're trusting you to give them an accurate measurement on it, right?
No, I know. That's why when we have, like, stroke patients, I make sure the most accurate one possible. Now, I have one, she's late in CVA, but the problem is We can't take one her left side. She's got left side of paralysis. And her right, she's obese. And our manual one does not fit around her arm.
Do it on
so
the
that's
ankle.
Why I have to do the wrist one. Huh?
Hey, you can do it on the ankle.
Really? Where do I put the stethoscope? I meant a serious question. Where do
no,
I put it?
Well, if you're going to do an ankle manually, you have to put it posterior tibial.
Okay.
Posterior tibial. But you can use a brachial automated cuff at the ankle.
Oh, true.
Especially
okay.
especially in an obese person.
Out of my trunk.
But, I mean, the one that you put on the arm, the one that you put on the arm, right, above the brachial artery, the one you put there in an obese person, if you're getting inaccurate measurements, you can do on the ankle and get a better, more accurate blood pressure.
Well, it's a good thing she has at least one foot because she has a left knee amputation. I get it.
The other thing
I'm
is the person has a mastectomy and they have lymphedema, then you can't do it there. If a person has an AV shunt because they're on dialysis, you can't do it there. Not an AV shunt, but, you know, the...
What about a port that's on the right side of her chest?
About a porticat?
Yeah.
On the right side?
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to matter.
Okay.
I don't think that
no,
would matter.
No, seriously, I wanted to know because I thought about it today. I'm like...
But I think mastectomy with lymphedema will not give you an accurate reading, and you definitely cannot compress their artery venous cath that they have installed for the dialysis. That's how it is.
Yeah,
so.
You can't if they got that AV shunt, you can't do it there.
Mm-hmm.
And the mastectomy and stuff like that. Yeah. And I did notice that from her left arm to her right arm. You can't feel her left pulse and her left arm, but she could barely feel it in her right one.
Hey, so what happens if you put a blood pressure cuff on somebody and as it expands and compresses the artery, their fingers contract like a trigger finger? What's that mean?
I have no idea. I didn't know that could happen.
Yeah, you put the blood pressure cuff on, and next thing you know, their fingers contract. That's a calcium deficiency.
It's what?
Calcium deficiency.
Oh, okay. What about when you put a blood pressure cuff on, they piss and moan and whine and cry because, oh, my God, it hurts too much. I tell them to sit down and be quiet and breathe.
It'll stop hurting if you smack them in the face and they won't feel it there anymore. It'll stop hurting if you smack them in the face and then they won't feel it there anymore.
Exactly. I just hold her hand and tell them to freeze. It'll be fine. It'll stop. The quicker you sit still, the quicker it goes away. And usually that works. Usually that works. But not all the time. So the last thing to cover for this is pelvic pain, endometriosis, pelvic floor tension, myalgia, and PID, or chronic pelvic inflammatory disease. Endometriosis is a condition results within when cells in the lining of a woman's uterus, because we know there's only two genders. I'm just going to throw that out there. Migrate into the abdominal cavity and plant themselves on structures such as the pelvic walls, surfaces of the ovary, and some women with this condition experience pain that can be chronic. It sucks. I've had it multiple times. It kind of comes and goes as it pleases.
And if a person's never had abdominal surgery, then and they tell you they have endometriosis, it's a lie. The only way to diagnose it is the surgeon actually sees uterine tissue in the abdominal cavity. It has to be visualized.
Very true. I had which I could have been misdiagnosed with the endometriosis as well. And I had, hold on, let me look up the appropriate, the medical
it was an abdominal
what I had.
It was an abdominal migraine, I know. Already done.
No.
I'm just playing.
Oh, here it is. I think it's what it was called.
Mesenteric infarct.
I had adenomyosis is what I had.
Adenomyosis?
And that's why I had to have my hysterectomy.
Because you had leiomyomas.
And what?
Leiomyomas, L-E-I-O, leiomyomas.
Oh, I had adenomyosis.
Yeah, adenomyosis is also called a leiomyoma. It's called a fibroid uterine. Causes heavy bleeding, tumors.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Look it up.
So heavy periods, cramping, painful sex, and infertility. And I had all of that, those issues, and I would hemorrhage. I would hemorrhage every month, and I would be 6, 7, 8, 9 days. And then, which they call it a foggy uterus, a flaccid uterus, whatever. And it's like a sponge. And when you're having your period and you bend over, hemorrhage. I was going through a super, you know, the always super double plus, triple wrap around your neck pad. You might as well wear diapers. I was going through one every 15 minutes for days upon days. They've actually had to give me an injection of some kind of whatever, I don't know what it was, to stop the hemorrhaging. And I had cysts on my ovaries that ruptured. And so that's when they said, you know, we're just going to take it all. Cervix, uterus, ovaries, every bit of it.
Both of them? Both ovaries?
Uh-huh.
Both ovaries?
Yep.
Because they'll usually leave one. They'll usually leave one to let your hormones continue the cycles.
Well, the reason why he took it, both of them, is because I had cysts on the other one, and he saw that there was some damage or whatever to the other one, and he's like, I could leave it or I could take it. I'm like, nope, just take it. I didn't want to run into any risk. And so, yeah. Pelvic floor tension myalgia is due to spasms of the pelvic floor muscles, which loop around the rectum and attach to the front of the pelvis. Simple, short, to the point. PID can occur if long-term infection causes... Oops. It disappeared. Hold on. Your tubes to... Hold on a second. I'm missing the page here. Okay. It's a long-term infection causes your fallopian tubes to scar and stick to your ovaries. That's pretty much it for that. And it's also very painful. Interstitial cystitis is a painful bladder condition that affects mainly women, and it results from chronic inflammation of the bladder wall. I've never heard of this one. Pelvic congestion syndrome?
That's $18. No, I'm sorry. I got disconnected. I just called back in.
Oh, okay. Pelvic congestion syndrome. Have you ever heard of that? I'm sure you probably have.
No.
Oh, well, it says it may be caused by varicose-type veins in various locations of the pelvis, and... It leads to the blood pooling in the ovaries and pelvic area. Huh. You learn something new every day. Ovarian remnant syndrome occurs with small pieces of the ovary left behind. Oh. So if the doctor doesn't take all your ovary out and if anything is left, you could get a cyst, a painful cyst from it. I hope they took all of mine. That's all I got to say.
So why, after a hysterectomy, do you have to continue getting pap smears?
I don't know. Because they can't get all your cervix?
Correct. Very good. Yes.
external. They cannot get all the cervix out. There's a little bit of the cervical cup left when they sew it up. And even though they think they may have gotten it all, there may still be cervical tissue that every now and then you need to have a pap smear, even though you've had a hysterectomy.
Well, I haven't had shit done in 5 years. Maybe I should have them check it.
Yep. And once you have the ovaries removed, if you're going through menopausal type symptoms, never let a doctor give you estrogen alone, because you need to have some progesterone with it, because unopposed estrogen can lead to cancers as well. If you have one ovary remaining, then you can give the patient estrogen alone.
Oh, okay.
But unopposed estrogen can cause cancer, so be advised about that. I mean, we're talking reproductive now, and that's like a whole total different subject. But the most common cause, one of the high risk factors for PCOS, which is a very painful condition too, polycystic ovarian syndrome, is early sexual activity, premature sexual activity. Children that have sex, many of them end up having PCOS before they're even 18 years old. It's because they start at like 13 or 14 years old.
Oh, okay.
Which is about half of the people in, you know what the difference between Southern women and rooster are, right? Rooster says cock-a-doodle-doo, Southern woman says any cock-a-doodle.
So that is, that's the first part of pain management or pain, whatever. And then I want to go in, we could probably do two more weeks and pretty much, I mean, we're not going to, there's no way we're going to cover it all, but
maybe the next time I can discuss some of the treatments that we do for pain management, especially along the spinal column and others. But maybe, once you start getting to the point of talking about treatments, yeah.
Yeah, hold on a second. Let me see. The one I wanted to go over next week is the cycles, chronic pain cycles, and then the cost. Well, we could skip the cost of chronic pain and then go right into treating chronic pain, is what you're talking about, all your the different things to treat it.
Well, chronic or acute, either one.
Yeah.
And the other, like for me, like for a general topic on pain, talking about the types of pain, that, you know, there's basically two types of pain, and one of the subtypes is divided into two different types of pain. So there's really three types of pain that you're gonna deal with. That is one important topic for pain. The second topic that I think might be important regarding pain that we haven't really touched on is psychosomatic pain. So that's
very true.
We talked a little bit about phantom limb syndrome, which is a type of psychosomatic pain. But you can actually have a person experiencing pain. They're inducing the pain on their own with their mind and not even realizing it. So psychosomatic pain is a very important topic to discuss. It's very common in females and anxious or hypochondriatic Munchausen type of patients.
Yeah.
Thank you for letting me share, Colonel.
Oh, no problem. I have you may not know the answer to this question.
I don't.
My daughter is almost 30 weeks, and the little monster is Breech right now, and he's almost 3 pounds. At what point did the babies flip? Were they, you know?
They usually get into the birthing position within 4 weeks of delivery. Now, what she can be doing is she can be doing some stomach massages to try to assist with that if she knows pretty much in what direction the baby is or whatever. But there are some exercises that she can be doing. But at 30 weeks, she still has about another month and a half or so, about anywhere from 38 to 42 weeks. 40 weeks would be the norm. So she still has, say, roughly another 2 months for that baby to flip around.
Yeah, this is where the the baby has a big head.
Is she diabetic?
But huh?
Is she diabetic?
No.
And she doesn't have gestational?
No, okay, no. She had her sugar test yesterday or today. But
the glucose tolerance?
Yeah. Huh?
The glucose tolerance?
Yeah. But
how old is she?
She sent me the picture of the ultrasound, and she has what they call lightning crotch. And she goes, wow, what a name for it.
What's
and
it called?
And it happens, they said, with the second time.
What's it called?
They call it lightning crotch, where the baby is up, and it happens with the second child, and it feels basically it feels like he's trying to kick his way out, and all the pressure she feels. And I had that, honest to God, with my third, and she had already flipped over, and her head was already in the birth canal. Because I was late, and it felt like she was trying to kick her way or push her way out, and I had a lot of pressure on my cervix. But that's what they said, because they were worried.
It sounds like a pudendal nerve irritation.
A what?
The pudendal nerve. If the baby's pushing on the pudendal nerve, she's going to have some irritation in the pelvic region. But
he should flip, though, right?
At 30 weeks, I think there's still time. But you can look at the embryology, the human embryology, and it'll tell you exactly where the baby should be at what particular, time in gestation.
3-minute warning.
But
okay, go ahead.
Yeah, but how old is she? That's my question.
Oh, she's 32.
So she's advanced maternal age.
Yeah, so her last, because she's having a boy, so they wanted one of each. So she's having a tube size.
And they've already done the amniotic fluid check to ensure that there's no Down syndrome going on?
Yep. Oh, that, no. They did all the other lab work, the blood work that they do.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know if they've changed it, but when I went and did my OB-GYN rotations, we check in amniotic fluid as well for like buildup of protein or lack of folic acid.
Well, she has to take folic acid because
Everyone taking prenatal vitamins have folic acid, but sometimes they'll give extra folic acid in advanced maternal age.
She has to take folic acid. She had to take folic acid with her first, and she was 30, to stay pregnant because her hormone levels were not high enough to stay pregnant.
Tell her if she has lightning vagina that I said I'd like to party with her one day.
That what?
I'd like to party with her one day, that lightning vagina. just play.
Thanks for another great show. God bless you guys. Love y'all. Listeners, thank you for listening. God bless America. God bless our children, our veterans, our military, first responders, missing. God bless the Defender 7. Good night.
Good night.
Defenders VII, guys. Defenders VII, www.com. All right. Good night. Thank you, guys. God bless.